I haven't heard from Ellen. I guess she won't be here. James emailed me today, said he will not be here. Couldn't make it this evening, so. Starting with that, roll call for Grants Committee. Erica?
Here.
Ann?
Here.
Chrissy?
Here.
Liz?
Here.
Judy?
Here.
And myself. All right. Accept the motion for approval of the meeting minutes from January 9th.
So moved.
Seconds.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Right. Accept the motion for approval of the February 6th meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any public comments? No? Approval of reports, there is none. Bills and purchase requests.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
On, and Lisa's not here, maybe you can answer it for me. On page 4, there was a trip, and I was wondering, could you tell me what kind of trip or training that was?
Yes, so Lisa works on our CDBG, and there are, as are a lot of our grants, required certifications and standards trainings that we have to take. They advise us to have those certifications. Otherwise, the funding would go to an entity that had those certifications and had updated, particularly with CDBG, CSBG. Their rules change all the time. So we decided just to send Lisa to the training because she has been a superior manager. She's very good at holding everyone in line to do things. So she had to go to Philadelphia. We paid the government standard rate. There's no frills involved, and all of the money is paid through the grant for the training.
Okay.
And I wanted to share with you, for our weatherization program, Make Friends came and said that we are slated to get up for an extra $1 million because we have proactively trained our weatherization team, and we're the only county in the state that has maintained the same weatherization workers. So the rest of them, they change all the time because slow and steady has been Dave Goodrich's pace and management style. We're up to get a lot more because we have proactively kept that group and kept them trained and certified. So
good.
Excellent.
So okay. Dave Goodrich.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Going around. Move on to the resolutions authorizing park grants and the recreation grant fact sheet.
So I've got that that I'll pass around for signatures. The PEP grants were awarded, and James Arnold from our office worked diligently to make sure that all of the districts were represented, and that's the detailed grant request.
Thank you.
I don't know the do you know the population of Madison?
It was in one of our reports.
6,000.
$6,000?
Mm-hmm.
So what is it, again, that normally they get like $15,000? What's the budget?
Minimum.
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 Minimum. $15,000, yeah.
A minimum of $15,000.
No matter what, no matter how big you are.
Okay, they got 19, though. I mean, what's the population that, there's a certain population that they get only, you know, the $15,000 minimum, mm-hmm. the smaller towns.
I think that all of it, with this particular grant, everyone gets $15,000.
Yeah, it's $5 per capita. Okay. No matter, and if you're underneath that, you get $15,000.
I guess my question was, what is the population?
Hi, Helen.
I'm under that gets the
sorry. How are you?
By a train.
I think that all of our townships that request and our cities that request the funds that are approved, the minimum they get is $15,000. You mean what population is over?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
I don't.
But that's okay. I was just kind of curious.
James is.
The whole county is 200.
262, I think.
260, right. Yeah. But I know, like, on Hamburg, the small towns always get that $15,000,
right.
And there's a population.
What that
and
is.
Under that gets that regularly,
right.
And I'm trying to figure out what the population is, and under, you know, like over a certain population, they get more per.
Yeah, I can have James email you.
Okay.
How that specifically breaks down.
Okay.
And
right about 3,000.
About 3,000. Okay.
Accept the motion for the PEP grant.
So moved.
Second.
Erica?
Yes.
Yes.
Chrissy?
Yes.
Helen?
Aye.
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
All right. So moved. Moving on to resolution authorizing commitments to the Leadership Council of Southwestern Illinois and the fact sheet.
This is the resolution and the fact sheet to be signed. So we have had a contract with the Leadership Council of Southwestern Illinois. This is the second installment of that contract. So it is $30,000 total annually for the contract and in two installments of $15,000. This has been in place for some time, and we brought some background with us in case anybody wanted to see a little more detail.
I'll take that, Kristen, if everybody's done it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. This has been, like you said, in place for a number of years, right?
This is the bill here for the past since
right.
December.
Right.
Well, for the last 3 months.
Did that increase? Was it last year, or has it always been?
No.
Always been the same? Okay.
Any further discussion on this?
Well, has it always been the same? Let's be clear. I think there was a communication at some point that actions were increased, activities were increased, and so it was increased at some point, right? Like within the past 2 years?
No, I think it was about 5 years ago.
About 5 years ago, okay.
It's always been that since I've been.
Okay.
Has it?
I just want to make sure that
for some
we.
Yeah, that's fine. There was something that I was maybe thinking of it, something else, but that's fine.
I saw a communication where it increased when the efforts with Scott Air Force Base were increased.
Maybe that was a different,
yeah,
it was something to do.
I'm trying to think what that was, but that was not the same.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll accept the motion.
So moved.
Second.
Can you hand me that?
Second.
Erica?
Yes.
Ann?
Yes.
Kristen?
Yes, sorry.
Yes.
Ellen? Judy?
Yes.
So moved.
Chairman, do you want Ms. Hawkins to sign the purchase?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
She got held up by a train.
Granite trains. Go around.
I don't think we can do anything about those.
No, this one you got to sign. Moving on. Employment and training updates.
Ship it on back up there.
Jones?
Good afternoon. Just a few quick updates. I'm passing around a flyer I'm going to talk about in a minute. But as far as employment and training, our Workforce Innovation Board recently posted RFPs on the county website. We're seeking proposals for our in-school and out-of-school youth provider programs, as well as an operator for our one-stop center in Wood River, so those are out right now. Also, we continue to provide job search and training services for those who have been affected by the Trade Act, including steelworkers. We've started recently, we met with the Walmart employees as well as the Macy's employees, trying to help those employees transition to not only new employment, but help them with other services that might be of assistance. That could be their unemployment insurance, United Way programs, and those sorts of things. We have our final meeting coming up this week that Sarah will be at for the Kmart and all of those employees. So we've also, what I'm passing around is a flyer. We've been doing a media blitz with Cindy's help and some other things through the county. We're trying to get the promotion out about our training dollars. We have funding available. We've been putting in job ads, not only in the newspapers, but also on social media. We've been putting things, PSAs, we've been doing websites, we even did a couple of radio station ads. And basically, we have funding available for training. So if you know of anybody personally or somebody that's been laid off, might meet the income guidelines, they do qualify for training. This is an opportunity to get training paid for. The entire tuition, books, fees, tools, uniforms, etc. for most programs. So it's an underutilized program. Every year about this time, we have more money than we can spend, so we try to really promote that. That's why we meet with the Macy's employees and Kmart employees to give them a chance to go back to school. So if you have any questions about that, feel free to let me know. But there is funding available for those folks who need schooling. And also, too, if anybody has not been to our Wood River One-Stop Center, I'd invite you to come by. We're in the back of the old Wood River Hospital, the county facility. We're open 8 to 4:30 Monday through Friday, so we actually open a half an hour earlier than most county departments. Feel free to come by, check out what we do for job seekers. I know Chairman Prenzler was there last week, so we invite grant committee members as well as county board members to come by and check it out. And with that, I think I'll turn over to Sarah.
So we continue to administer the on-the-job training contracts with Worldwide Technologies. To date, we've spent over $200,000 in new hire training, or expended $200,000 in new hire training costs. These costs have been reimbursed to the company. We also have pending incumbent worker training programs or contracts with several companies. We're working with Illinois Manufacturing Excellence Center to get those going. So we've got a fourth in the work with Imperial Manufacturing of Alton, working on one with Cope Plastics of Alton, and then there are a couple in Bond County, Earhart and Bass Mallett Publishing. We are part of Greenville. That's where those two companies are, as part of our two-county consortium, Madison Bond. So employment and training, along with Workforce Innovation Board, DCEO, and Ameren, continue with our business retention and expansion efforts. This is a regional effort to retain and grow our business base, and this focuses mainly on manufacturing, healthcare, and retail, and we meet on a monthly basis. I think Matt mentioned this at the last meeting I wasn't in attendance at, but we've partnered with Lewis and Clark Community College to apply for a Youth Career Pathways grant. That's to provide opportunities for youth to connect with careers in IT, automotive, welding, transportation, distribution, and logistics. And then I'm coordinating the St. Louis Regional Business Services Team. This is a regional collaboration with workforce partners in St. Clair County, St. Louis City County, St. Charles County, all over the area in the region, and we've teamed up to provide two different job fairs for VJC. They're constantly hiring, and so we're doing one in Belleville on March 28th at Memorial Hospital. The timing on that is TBD still, and then another one in St. Louis on April 19th, and that's at the St. Louis Science Center. So we're trying to get the word out about those. We don't have flyers just yet, but as soon as we blast those out.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm familiar with this board, but thank you for letting me attend. When you do your workforce, do you keep numbers that for the training for those you do for people, how many end up with jobs in that? Do you have that?
Yeah, we have performance, but we actually have 17 federal performance measures we have to maintain. So we have to not only maintain employment, but they have to maintain it in the second quarter and fourth quarter, and they have to be at a certain wage rate. So I'd be more than happy to send that out if anybody would like to see it.
I would, personally. And
actually, I have a copy I can give you, right?
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
I only have one. So. I had a feeling I might be next to ask some questions.
Moving on to the MIC update.
Okay, the MIC Summit's coming along great. We're about a month out, so we're very excited. We had NPR came to our office a week ago today, and March 13th is starting a year-long ongoing segment about what it means to be the model innovative county in 2017. So we did our first interview Monday, and we're excited to introduce them to other departments in our county and really let them see what we're doing. We've had other media partners that, like Scott, who has been following it. We will be announcing our panels later this week. We have some really esteemed members of the dais, and I want to thank everybody. Matt, Rhonda, and our board members have been helping and making suggestions, but along the way of getting these contacts and asking them to participate, we've made some partnerships that have been above and beyond, especially in technology. T-Rex has said, not only will we tell you how we did this, but we want to partner with you in Madison County for technology entrepreneurship. So MIC Summit's coming along amazing. We're doing great things, very excited about that. Everybody get their RSVPs? Okay, good. Hope you can make it. Economic development?
Yep.
Okay, so we're booming in economic development. The aggressive approach has been fantastic. James, Sam, Lisa, Sharon in our office have been doing a lot. We have partnered with Lewis and Clark Community College and working on connecting all of the junior colleges on both sides of the rivers to the curriculum that they have created that makes the standard for certification for port and river workers. We're looking to expand it into rail as well. So we've connected 9 junior colleges to what Madison County has created as the standard, and we're looking to partner with Lewis and Clark to help them connect more. Mary Lamy from Freightway, which we help support as a county, she successfully got the contract signed with the Port of New Orleans to connect our central port with Port of New Orleans. And now we're looking at Houston and signing a contract with them. So the more we connect, the more we become a transportation hub. We again met with T-Rex about technology development and technology incubators in Madison County to retain our students from SIU Edwardsville, SIU Carbondale, create new jobs in Madison County. We've been working in our enterprise zones to woo businesses, and we've had a lot of success so far. So if you come in my office, you can see the walls are covered with easel paper of all of the businesses that we're working with to bring job creation into Madison County. So do you have any questions? It's a lot.
Moving on, Ms. Rhonda Sage from the Leadership Council, Mr. Mike McCarthy.
Wonderful. Well, if it's okay, I'm going to hand out a few of these booklets. I'll just hand those around. Just take one. Pass them. First of all, I just want to say thank you very much for allowing us to come here today to talk to you about the Leadership Council and what we do. We've had a long-standing relationship with Madison County, and so we've created all the opportunities to work with you over the years. Our goal is to unite the region for growth, being our location where we are in the center of the United States, and being the second largest population center and fourth largest in the St. Louis MSA puts us in a unique place. As you look at all the companies that we have here within our region, what's important to note is those are many national and international companies that we have right here, from Procter & Gamble, Amazon, on down the line. And it's really important to promote that those companies are here, because many companies like to cluster where they have successful businesses. And so being out in the community, just looking at Gateway and Lakeview Commerce Center, over 16 million square feet of industrial-grade bulk warehouse has been built since 1998 with less than 1% vacancy. So all of those buildings down there that you see in the Gateway Lakeview Commerce Center are full. And that's a great thing, and we want them full. In our location, you can reach 50% of the U.S. buying power within one short day's travel of this location, which makes us a strategic hub for distribution, and that's important to know. The other thing that we have as a strategic advantage is available, affordable land near multimodal assets. So when you look at river, road, rail, pipeline, they all come through here, and they've come through here for a long time, and that's a strategic location. That's why all of these companies are located right here. And the more we tell that story, the more companies that we see coming here and wanting to come here. So when we did a study about all the different types of multimodal freight and activities that are coming through here, agriculture, food processing, all of the energy, bulk, finished goods, military types of activities going to Scott Air Force Base, we have an enormous amount of freight. And as part of that, we help create the St. Louis Regional Freight District that Mary Lamy runs. So about 10 years ago, we all know about our levee situation that took place. And I'm very proud to tell you that many of these levee segments are into FEMA for reaccreditation. It's taken us 10 years to get here, $110 million. And we at the Leadership Council have a watchdog group that watches over the funding for the levees to make sure that they're on track, on time. If there's anything we don't like, we will call it out. So right now, we are on track to have our levees reaccredited. Now, we didn't know this at the time, and 10 years ago it was something that we thought was completely devastating for our area. This puts us in a strategic competitive advantage. I was doing this presentation at the East West Gateway Council of Governments, and Mayor Slay stopped me and he said, you know, I'm the mayor of all the coalitions from Minneapolis down to New Orleans, and all of these other river communities are going to have to go through what you had to go through with their levee deaccreditation process, and here we are coming out of it as a competitive advantage. Now we have the ability to attract companies we've never even known about before. And so doing this presentation at Union Pacific Railroad's headquarters just a few weeks ago, all over the country they're being decertified, levee areas where they would have normally had development. Here we can attract new business, industry, and new facilities that they will not be able to go any other place in the United States, so a big strategic advantage. Another thing that the Leadership Council works on is Scott Air Force Base, a $3 billion asset to our region. Many, many people that live in Madison County, work in Madison County, and then also certainly buy a lot of retail products live at Scott Air Force Base. You see huge populations of not only military but retirees. And so Scott Air Force Base is one of the main areas that we continue to work on, from cybersecurity on down to placing airmen that are coming through those transitional programs. One of the key programs that we've had for some time working with Madison County Employment and Training is the Manufacture Craft Your Future campaign. When we went out to businesses, we learned that there's a huge shortage of people in manufacturing and the crafts. We developed this campaign together, and it's been going on for quite a while, and we presented to over 6,000 people in our area about this specific area of workforce development. And I'm proud to tell you that Lewis and Clark and SWCC have had to add classes because of so many people wanting to go into these areas, which helps us build new companies, because if we have a shortage of workers within the area, and we have a lot of people who need to go to work, it's good to connect those different programs together. And Matt has a lot of training dollars that can send them back to work. So as you look at our area, this map has a lot of logos, and we could have added a lot more. We have over 215,000 jobs in our area, $19 billion in revenue. If you look up and down the Mississippi River, there are a few areas that can really compare to what we have here in southwestern Illinois and right here in Madison County. And we're really proud of that, and we're out telling that story to really anybody that will listen to us, and we've been a lot of places. Recently, I came back from Omaha, visiting Union Pacific's headquarters there, talking to them about bringing new business. And then just a couple weeks ago, I was in Chicago. The next city we'll go to is Atlanta, talking to site selectors, developers, international embassies about coming here. Last week, from our trip to Chicago, we had the Netherlands come to visit and also want to bring new companies to our area as startup companies. And the more we get out, the more people learn about southwestern Illinois and Madison County, the more business and job creation we're going to have here. So you'll see us doing that all over. Now, Leadership Council has been doing this for a long time, and when you look at all of our industry segments that we have, from advanced manufacturing to energy to agriculture, just in agriculture alone, it's an $18.4 billion industry, 164,000 jobs. So we have a robust economic activity here in southwestern Illinois, Madison County specifically, and it doesn't get there by itself. You have to continue to work it, grow it, and drive that home. So we're really proud of where we are. One of the things that we're also doing is coordinating with all of the schools, universities, to make sure we have all the training programs and vocational training that are necessary, and then certainly showcasing all of the different areas from Gateway Lakeview Commerce Center. And by the way, Cushman Wakefield just named this Commerce Center as one of the top 10 hottest sites in the country. And that's really important to know, because as you look throughout the country, we have one of the hottest development sites right here in Madison County. And then when you look at America's Central Port, what a phenomenal port that is. High growth, you're going to see container on barge in the near future. So many, many activities are going on within that port district. And so when you look at Madison County and all the things we have, it's significant, it's growing. And I'd like to turn it over to my co-colleague, Mike McCarthy. He's president of Terminal Railroad, who's going to tell you a little bit about Merchants Bridge.
It's always tough to follow Rhonda, especially when you have a cold. And when you come in front of a grant group, it's always good to tell you right up front that I'm not asking for any money. So you can rest assured there. A lot of people don't know about the Terminal Railroad Association of St. Louis. It is a very well-kept secret. We've been around since 1889. We were really born out of necessity. There were 22 railroads that built into St. Louis, a lot of them were on the Illinois side and in this area. All 22 railroads were trying to deliver to each other. They were all trying to get across the Mississippi, and that was done by barges. So in 1889, a few of the railroads got together and they floated some bonds, and they started to, they bought the Eads Bridge, they bought the St. Louis Tunnel Company, which went bankrupt a little bit later. They bought the Merchants Bridge, and over time we built into what we are today, which is the Terminal Railroad Association of St. Louis. We are unique, and we are owned by the five Class I railroads that serve our region. We are a closely held corporation that is really here to provide equal service to every railroad, if you are an owner or not. So we're almost an at-cost railroad. We provide a service. We are independent, but we're very unique. So we were established in 1889 really to make sure that every railroad didn't have to deliver to every other railroad. It would have been a real quagmire if that would have continued. So we're like a clearinghouse, and we provide the routes through the metropolitan area for most of the freight and also Amtrak. So we've been doing that for the same thing since 1889. We're still doing that same process today. A large part of what we do that makes our gateway so efficient is our two bridges. So we own the Merchants Bridge to the north that you're familiar with. It starts in North St. Louis, and the footprint is in Illinois at Venice. Illinois is where it comes down at. But it is here in the heartland of America. The thing that's really interesting to know about this region, most of the railroad infrastructure is on the Illinois side, like a lot of what Rhonda said, there's a reason for that. It is the naturally dredged side of the harbor, so the Illinois side is always deeper water, better water than the Missouri side. So the railroads saw that, they wanted to build to the river, because that's where the economic activity is, and that's why you see a lot of the highways here as well. But this region is the second largest railroad hub in the nation as far as interchange, the handoff from one railroad to another, and also it's the third largest just by sheer volume of traffic. Chicago's number one, Kansas City's number two, and we're number three. When you look at, I haven't got to page six, but on page five, if they're numbered, it'll be just a little map of our area. There's been tremendous growth in this area over the last 10 years, and I think Rhonda touched on that. In the past 10 years, there has been five major unit train loadouts that transfer goods between trains and barge. And that's a huge advantage because there's very few times where you see great railroads, which we have six Class 1 railroads, freight railroads that serve this area, and great water come together. The reason why it's great water, all the natural stuff about it, but we're below the lock and dam system. So immediately when you hit that first lock, which is just as you start into the canal, that's where your first lock is, the rates go up by about $8 a ton. So it's a tremendous advantage to be south of the lock and dam, and it's ice-free year-round. That's why you're seeing the Louis Dreyfuses. That's why you're seeing the Bungies build facilities up and down the river in our community, because they need to be there. Now on page six, if you see this, there are 23 railroad crossings of the Mississippi between New Orleans and Minnesota. Of those, you can see the two highlighted are the two that are here in St. Louis. So of the 23, there are 11 of those bridges that touch down. So out of the 23, 11 of those bridges have a footprint into Illinois. Of the six that carry at least 30 trains a day, which is a very heavy load, that's over a train an hour, five of those touch down in Illinois. TRA bridges are unique because we are open access to all railroads. Every one of those other bridges except the Huey P. Long Bridge in New Orleans is only used by one railroad. So it's they're private. We're open to all railroads. So if it snows up in Chicago, everything wants to route down to St. Louis. If there's a flood in New Orleans, everything comes up to St. Louis to keep that national freight network up. Unfortunately, the Merchants Bridge is the oldest of the 23. It was built in 1889, so it's 127 years old. So you think about an old bridge in the highway system as being 50 years old. This is 127 years old. We've been some very good stewards of it. But right now, two trains, it's a double-track bridge, two trains can't pass at the same time, so it's weight-restricted. There's certain cars that can't go across it. So it's becoming near the end of its life cycle, and there's not a bridge engineer out there that if we don't do something in 10 years, it will probably go out of service. So we need to do something fairly quickly. The national freight for rail traffic is supposed to grow by 30% by 2040. So in just a very short time, 2040 seems like a long way away, but when you think about the amount of rail traffic there is today, and there's a lot of it, it's going to grow by 30% in that amount of time. So by putting this back in service as a double-track bridge and being able to handle two trains at once, modern clearances on the bridge, we're going to be able to stay up with that growth just by putting it back to the original standards or the modern standards, but using the same footprint. This will also save 5 minutes on every route between when it comes into our territory, about Granite City into the St. Louis Union Station. It'll save 5 minutes on every Amtrak run that they run because of the higher speeds that we can use and some other upgrades that we're going to be making with it. Also expected that there will be a benefit analysis study that was done. We're going to save $63 million on highway damage over the next 20 years. You're going to be reducing blocked road crossings. I heard somebody say that they got blocked by a train coming today. That might not have happened if the new bridge had been in place. So a lot of the people that are supporting this idea, what we were surprised to find out, has been the barge and the rail industry, because there's so much agriculture business that wants to come to this area. Rhonda was saying about all the job growth that's in the river traffic and the rail traffic. This is the reason why. On page 9, you'll see that we've been a really good steward and a very good partner of this. In 2005, we realized that we had to replace the two 500-foot trusses off the each end of the bridge first. They were in the worst shape, and we did that on our through our own funds at $17 million. In 2011, we got an ARRA grant that helped us replace the west approach. That project is just now being done. That was $9 million of TRA's money and $13 million through the ARRA grant. And in 2016, 16 and 17, what we're doing now is the last phase, and that's replacing the three main spans and the east approach, which will be on the Illinois side. So what we've asked for is we're going after, I don't know if you've heard of the Fast Lane grants, I'm sure you have. So we're in the bucket for that. There's a carve-out for freight railroads that we have applied for, and we're asking for $75 million of a $200 million project. So the rest of it will be funded by us and our Class 1 owners, and then we're asking for a Fast Lane grant as well. So I think we've been some great stewards of the bridge. There's a few pretty cool photos in there that I think are cool photos of some of the construction that we've done today. But the point that I'll leave with you is a lot of railroad companies, especially small ones like us, over the years, these assets that we've been maintaining over the years have become very outsized as compared to the size of company we are. Our normal capital spend is about $1.5 to $3 million a year. We return nothing back to our owners. Everything that we make, we plow back into the railroad. But when you come across these once in a multi-generational investment, like a merchant's bridge, at $200 million, and we usually have about $1.5 to $3 million a year, it's really a heavy lift for us to do on our own. And that's why we really need these grants. Madison County and the other Illinois communities have been very supportive of us, and we appreciate that. We think we've had a very good relationship with the counties, and we think we're a big part of what we do here. So I'm happy to be able to come to you today and give you an update on what we're doing. We're going to be on 100% at 100% engineering. The main spans will be done in about May of this year. So we'll be, and all of our permitting is going along very, very well. That should come together. We're going after a RIF loan, which is a railroad, for small railroads. That's a government-funded loan. So that's a big part of the financing, very low cost, but still it is a loan. So we're going to be going after that, and the Fast Lane grant is the majority of the funding for the railroad. And if everything falls into place, we get our grant, engineering and permitting all comes together, we could go to bid on this project as early as late summer of this year. So we're really happy with the way it's going right now, but that's my update.
Thank you.
Just one last thing. We also produced the investment update, and this is entirely written by us, and we just wanted to provide you with a copy. We give these to economic development folks, and they use those to promote our region. We just wanted to say we're grateful and appreciative for your support over the years, and really appreciate working with you and Kristen and many, many other people in the county, and look forward to doing that. Do you have any questions for us?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Where I appreciate all the development in Madison County, but where I live is a great American Bottoms floodplain.
Yep.
Where these warehouses, according to the books that thick, that says don't build it, by the Corps of Engineers, by the Madison County Soil and Water, we paid millions of dollars for these studies after each flood to tell us where not to build. Had I known really this was coming up, I would have brought them. They go all the way up to the wall. So when the warehouses start coming in, everybody said, my God, the levy board included the Metro Sanitary District by a Walter Greathouse Sr. They're going to cause us a big financial problem. They were created to protect the American Bottoms from flood, the levy development and all. I served on the governor's committee to do that. Well, the problem is development, jobs, all those things sound fine. But when you get to that part of the American Bottoms, which is, includes the Granite City area, East St. Louis, Sawjay, the water all comes to the lower place from these developments where they have to build higher. Nothing has been done. They build moats around them. That's water table. That's not surface water, rainwater. That water, that groundwater comes up and stays in these moats around these places. And it's you can be proud on one hand that there are jobs, proud that there are these things being built. But in one area, a large area of the American Bottoms, that floods. And nothing is being done about that. That's what the problem is. There's so I wanted to bring out the bad part about it and the good part, you know. Mm-hmm.
Sure, and you know, these areas have been a mecca for trade for a long, long time, and it's where river, road, rail, and you know, pipeline come together. But I do understand your point there about, you know, having a happy balance between, you know, the different areas and also with development too. And so we always try to do that, and we're environmentally conscious of anything that we are doing, and I agree with, you know, having a nice balance where we are. I think we've been very lucky to have a lot of development, and that's a good thing. And we like the job creation, but I do understand the point that, you know, there's always a happy balance there.
Mm-hmm. Thousands of people live in the American Bottoms. Mm-hmm. Thousands of people. Mm-hmm. They flood. Who do they come to? Their county board member. I can say, oh, I vote no on these warehouses. But one vote, two votes. Lisa, for instance, she understands what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Other county board members. We can't get it across anybody's head that we are in the bottoms. All this is going up, and the water always seeks a lower level, comes up in the homes, till at surface, the groundwater is maybe an inch, sometimes over. Heavy rains, it floods. Thank you for mm-hmm. your time.
Thank you.
Bless you. Bless you.
Bless you. Bless you.
Any other business? I'm just curious about this draft.
Yeah, I got it.
Does everybody have it in their packet? So this is just a draft of what we're handing out. Specifically, Stephanie, she is meeting with all the communities to get input. For so we are compliant with our home. This is the draft NOPA that's going to go out as far to go along with our CDBG and home mm-hmm. program.
My main concern is the one that says repeal the crime-free rental housing ordinance in Alton, Collinsville, and Granite City. What's the rationale for that?
I I think that that was part of the, I think that the oversight on this grant, they felt like that particular stipulation would, how do I say this, that it would exclude certain populations from being able to participate.
Well, I beg to differ with you, because to me, we have a lot of low-income housing in Collinsville, and people can come there to live. But our main thing is to keep the criminal element down. Now, you're saying we should just open it up and the criminals can come if they want.
Well, let me be clear. I'm not saying that at all. Quite the opposite. In fact, the administration and community development is taking the opposite view, and we're trying to reinforce our public security departments and emergency safety infrastructure, not decrease it. And personally, I have a rental property in Collinsville, so the opposite of what I would feel is in everyone's best interest is that we go to this. That being said, right now it is in the stages of getting input, and in these public meetings, no one has mentioned it. So it's actually, I am going to take your input and put it down and give it to Stephanie as because this is a public meeting, so we can take the input from this meeting and include it, because I do think that that's important. And if we are going to promote affordable housing in our community, which we have to because of the entry-level workforce, we need to have assurances that it is not going to create a unsafe element. We're trying to make it more secure. And probably the crime-free rental housing ordinances should be extended to all townships and cities, not just those three.
Ms. Dalton and Kristen, I believe, if I remember correctly, from I guess I did work on that previously, but the crime-free ordinances, some people believe that those can re-victimize victims of domestic violence. So if someone calls the police because they have a domestic dispute at home, if there are multiple calls to the police, then that person can be kicked out of their housing. So that is something that can happen. It, you know, it would keep a woman or a man from contacting the police if they are experiencing abuse. So that's one argument that some people make. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the specific thing that you're referring to or not, but
yeah.
I think that was HUD has brought that up, so I'm not sure if that's...
Yeah, well, the crime-free housing has nothing to do with a tenant that is living there. The crime-free housing is the background checks that go on when a person applies to rent.
Requiring to
and,
get in.
And they, if there's a back, something in their background that's criminal, then the landlord is held at bay for renting to them.
Okay. I know Dave Harrison with community development knows that, especially within Granite City. I know he's very familiar with that one.
Yeah, and the reason I'm familiar, because I was on the city council when we passed this. Mm-hmm. So I'm very well aware of what it is. Mm-hmm. I have rental property too, and I mean, it was, well, I was the deciding factor for that, because there were two against it, two for it, and I was the one that had to make up their mind. And I knew it would directly impact me because of my rental property. But it's been a good thing for our community. And like I said, it's not that we do not allow low-income housing in HUD and that in our community, because we have a lot of it. But it's just that it keeps the criminals from coming into our community if they're trying to get rental property
or, you know, to rent in our city. And, you know, it's just a protective measure, and it has cut down on a lot of our police having to go to certain areas where there was a crime element there all the time.
So, Liz, I'm a little confused. So what's the benefit? I mean, if it's saying this is a proposed goal and action, what's the benefit of them doing this?
That's what I'm asking, to repeal what we have.
Why would, I don't understand what the value is to...
Let's be clear on these, on the tax credits, this is not a part of that. So they can get the affordable housing tax credits without having this in their plan. This is a supplemental, this is supplemental funding source for affordable housing. The housing dollars, they want them to be utilized so people can rise out of their circumstances. A lot of companies now, and Matt can attest to this, they're looking at ways to hire felons, to hire people that have messed up, but maybe that's the end of it, and they're trying to get a foot up. Having that foot into affordable housing can be an important piece, a component in that. So HUD overall doesn't want to exclude certain populations, elements, into affordable housing. They want to include everyone as long as there's a path defined. However, we don't have that clear path set out yet. We're trying to get there, and that's part of something we're going to talk about at the summit, is how do we make it safe for everybody but still create a path for those who make us feel unsafe to rise. And until then, we can't repeal everything. So in these particular communities that are unwilling, and rightly so, to repeal these safe actions, that and ordinances that they've put in place, they probably will have a hard time getting these dollars for their supplemental affordable housing. And other places, you know, do. And that's, a lot of people say, well, why does this community always get money and this and we don't? And on certain things like this, and it's because you are committed to safety first, and in some ways, or you have ordinances that are adopted for a reason.
So really, it's different priorities for the different factions of
and the
federal,
you know,
versus local. Well, right, I just took me a second.
And when we passed it, you know, Belleville and Fairview Heights, O'Fallon, all of them had not passed theirs yet. They had one, but they weren't keeping it up to
date. Yeah.
Since we passed ours, they have passed theirs also, and they are active in it. So, you know, our whole area, they're trying to eliminate the problems that we have.
Yeah, and rightly so. And you know, one of the affordable housing applications that was just turned in Granite City is to repurpose the YMCA for the new face of affordable housing. That's one of the programs that I know turned in for revitalization and affordable housing tax credits. So that's important, that they be able to repurpose that building and turn it into something that's great, so the port can bring in more workers and help them rise up. However, you know, you have to give in to have additional funds attached, these particular additional funds, which that project has asked for, and have a soft commitment from our department, from the previous administration. That's part of it. And so they're going to have to come back to you all and ask for it.
And it's like on the first one here, they're talking about the prioritizing. Which, they say high opportunity neighborhoods. Which neighborhoods are those? I'm just saying that's pretty vague, just say high opportunity.
Yeah, so I
actually, the Illinois Housing Development Authority asked me to come up to Chicago a week and a half ago and meet with them and their decision makers on these tax credits, because they wanted to know what we were doing with the summit and how we were addressing these things. So that particular opportunity zone that gets favoritism, that's the wealthy communities. So that's why we have so many people asking us to support their projects in Glen Carbon, in Maryville, in the Edwardsville, in the wealthier communities, if they can get those tax credits approved, which they get higher prioritization by putting mixed level and housing, mixed income housing and low income housing in opportunity zones, better school districts, you know, it's better parks, better everything as far as they see. But the future, in the future, they're making some changes, and it will be more based on who has better connections to resources. In other words, which area would be better to connect to libraries, schools, shopping, restaurants, workplace. So it would be more enterprise zones areas where they would look at more favorably, or places where people could easily get to parks and schools so they wouldn't have to have a car to get around, things like that.
I just want to say part of our township is State Park Place, Collinsville. Mm-hmm. I have been reading about this lady years ago as she served. I thought, I want to meet her, because everything that she brought out was satisfactory to me. A lot of crime in State Park Place, Collinsville. I understand where you're coming from, and I certainly understand where you're coming from. It's gotta be worked out where they're satisfactory here. Because you can't discriminate. You just can't.
No, and we don't. Like I said, the reason that we started the crime-free housing was to get rid of an element that was really causing serious problems in our community.
Your husband was on the county board, wasn't he, years ago?
Yeah, years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, I've got the minutes since 1972, every county board minute.
Oh, my God. And you've read them.
It goes all the way up to the roof of the garage.
Well, now you know who was the brains behind the operation.
Yeah. You're right. What you're saying. Definitely right. Thank you.
Okay.
Wow.
Off my sofa.
Say, these are just proposals.
We're trying, Liz.
Like I said, I made notes on some of this. Just proposed right now, goals and actions, as they say. Nothing concrete yet.
Look at his notes. Now it's going to be shredded.
Is that this?
Yeah.
Oh, I just made a lot of. I see where they say provide monetary support. Okay. I always love when people say that. All right. Any other questions? Further discussion? Entertain a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? Or whoever? All right. All in favor? All right.
Who said that?
We did,
Judy.
Just to let you know, we didn't write any letters of support to anyone.
What I said
before
I started, I go back to this in an hour.
Support that rental.